Hello, I'm Stephanie Gillard, the Producing Artistic Director at American Stage. Welcome to Spotlight, the American Stage podcast, where we illuminate the artistry and ideas behind the stories.
Hey there, I'm Sadie Lockhart, the Community Engagement Associate at American Stage. Today's episode is all about Romeo and Juliet, as performed as part of our Shakespeare Light series. In this episode, you will hear from the director, Kristen Clippard, the prologue delivered before the performance by John Perez, and excerpts from the performance itself, as well as a chatback conversation with the cast. Hello, Kristen. Thank you so much for joining us. Could you tell us a little bit about your experience directing this piece for the virtual stage?
Hi, I'm Kristen Clippard. I was the director of Romeo and Juliet, our first ever live Zoom performance for the virtual stage at American Stage. And I'm so thrilled that I could be a part of it. It was a joy. It was a bit of a roller coaster watching the live performance happening today and being on the back end and scanning the script to make sure that if I had to jump in, if someone lost connection or lost power, that I could read in and keep the story moving forward, as well as seeing how we're taking care of audience members' needs, anyone who's having trouble signing on and things like that, and then checking out the stage manager, making sure that Rachel's good to go. So there was a lot of moving parts going on today, and so I feel a little crazy, but I think it went really well, and I'm really excited about it. There was a lot of considerations that went into directing a play in this way, because it's certainly not a movie, and it's certainly not like a live theater experience in a physical space. So how do we use this format here in the small screen of video to tell the story the most effective and most creative way possible? One of the things I was most delighted to find was that in this process, the audience gets a really intimate look into the life of the characters, because in Romeo and Juliet, I've chosen to have the actors direct their speech directly to the camera, partially because that's easy for them to look down at their screens and look at their scripts and raise their eyes right back up to the camera very quickly. But that also gives the audience a really, really unique insight into the characters' inner life. And so that you can have it, because it's a dual purpose. If I'm speaking to you as both the audience and as the other character in the scene, you're getting to see a perspective as an audience member that you don't normally get to see in an on-stage performance. And certainly in film, you've seen moments of that when people have direct eye contact with the camera. But Shakespeare created this thing called direct address. And direct address is one of my favorite theater tricks. And it works in both the theater and here on a live platform. So that's pretty exciting.
At the beginning of our shows at American Stage, we have a prologue to give some background information and contextual clues about the show before the audience sees it. Here is John Perez delivering the prologue for Romeo and Juliet.
For never was a story of more woe than this of Juliet and her Romeo. Though these are the final words in Shakespeare's most famous work, I've got to say, for such a somber tale, we as a society love to revisit these star-crossed lovers in many different ways. Hello, I'm John Perez. I'm one of the acting and production apprentices here at American Stage, and I'd like to welcome you to our virtual performance of Romeo and Juliet. In this story, we will meet two families at war, the Capulets and the Montagues. Juliet Capulet and Romeo Montague meet and fall in love despite their family's rancor. Juliet is assisted by her confidant, the nurse, and Romeo by his spiritual advisor, Friar Lawrence, who will be played by yours truly. The story follows the conflict that arises when young people strive for love above all else. With work meetings being conducted over Zoom, parents homeschooling their children, closures on stadiums, theaters, and other live events, we do indeed live in what feels like unprecedented times. And much of societal methods have turned to the unconventional. However, I would argue that this play in particular was written in rather unconventional times. Based on the Italian narrative poem, The Tragical History of Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's version was believed to have been written sometime between 1591 and 1595. A notable event that took place in December of 1592 was the London Plague outbreak. Stephen Greenblatt of the New Yorker points out, in Shakespeare, epidemic disease is present for the most part as a steady, low-level undertone, surfacing in his character's speeches, most vividly in metaphorical expressions of rage and disgust. Romeo and Juliet, however, specifically refers to the plague outbreak during which it was written, particularly in Friar Lawrence's lines from the full play. Going to find a barefoot brother out, one of our order, to associate me here in this city visiting the sick. In finding him, the searchers of the town, suspecting that we both were in a house where the infectious pestilence did reign, sealed up the doors and would not let us forth. This explanatory speech would suggest that a quarantine of sorts was going on in that time. As a result, Friar Lawrence's letters to Romeo... No spoilers. You'll find out what happens. This particular outbreak spanned into the following year, with over 19,000 deaths in London and theaters shutting their doors for most of that time. So, what's a playwright to do when the theaters are closed? Well, he kept writing. In the following years, there were numerous publications and performances of many works by the Bard, including his poems, Venus and Adonis, The Rape of Lucrece, as well as his plays, Romeo and Juliet, Titus Andronicus, and A Midsummer Night's Dream. This would be an unintentional theme in Shakespeare's life, as he also wrote Antony and Cleopatra, The Winter's Tale, The Tempest, and the Scottish play during various outbreaks. The tale of the young lovers and their feuding families serves as the basis for what seems to be an endless number of adaptations, including Prokofiev's ballet, operas by Gounod, Bellini, and Tchaikovsky, respectively, as well as the Bernstein and Sondheim musical, West Side Story. And while some of you may be pretty familiar with the 1968 Franco Zeffirelli film or Baz Luhrmann's film, this play also serves as the inspiration behind countless other works, some popular and some hidden gems. R&J's influence can be felt in musicals such as Once on This Island, as well as Anne Juliet, and a number of films, including The Lion King 2, Simba's Pride, Romeo and Juliet, and perhaps my favorite, Romeo Must Die. Needless to say, a lot of time has passed between 1595 and 2020, but we find ourselves in similar circumstances. And with our theaters closed, what's an artist or a group of artists supposed to do? Well, we endure. Just as Shakespeare wrote during the closures of his time, so many groups, companies, and independent artists have taken on the challenge of finding ways to provide audiences at home with what they've come to desire from a theater. A collective experience that brings a means of storytelling, escape, and hope. And with all the public tension in our world today, it is our hope to inspire the coming together of communities as to prevent any further tragedy. So, as we prepare to transport ourselves to the streets of Verona, we ask that you lean forward and engage with William Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet.
To give you a taste of this performance, here is the scene between Mercutio, Benvolio, and Romeo as Mercutio is delivering the famous Queen Mab speech.
Man, I just love watching Billy Finn work. He's played the role of Mercutio before, and so he's very, very familiar with the language. And watching him work and watching him adapt his gestures and his body language and do all of the work within this small square, has just been so much fun because he's done something different every single day, including today during the live performance. It was so cool because he said the word quind, and he really emphasized that quind. And then John, who played Benvolio, gave it right back to him and said, "This quind you talk of." And so that was something that's ever happened in rehearsal, and it was so delightful. You know, that happens on the live stage too, that, you know, one day something will come out of your mouth completely different, and it creates just a whole new tone or color to a moment.
Give me a torch. I am not for this ambling. Being but heavy, I will bear the light.
Nay, gentle Romeo. We must attend.
Not I, believe me. You have dancing shoes with nimble soles. I have a soul of lead, so stakes me to the ground, I cannot move.
You are a lover. Borrow Cupid's wings and soar with them above a common bound.
I am too sore and pierced with his shaft to soar with his light feathers. And so bound, I cannot bound a pitch above dull woe. Under love's heavy burden do I sink.
And to sink in it should you burden love, huh? Too great oppression for a tender thing.
Love a tender thing. It is too rough, too rude, too boisterous, and it pricks like thorn.
If love be rough with you, be rough with love. Come, we burn daylight, ho!
I dreamt a dream tonight.
And so did I.
Well, what was yours?
That dreamers often lie.
In bed asleep while they do dream things, true.
Oh, then I see Queen Mab hath been with you. She is the fairy's midwife, and she comes in shape no bigger than an agate stone, drawn with a team of little atomy over men's noses as they lie asleep. Her chariot is an empty hazelnut, made by the joiner squirrel or old grub, time out of mind, the fairy's coachmakers, and in this state, she gallops, night by night, lovers' brains, and then they dream of love. Sometimes she driveth o'er a soldier's neck, drums in his ear, but she starts and wakes, and being thus frighted, swears a prayer or two and sleeps again. This is that very Mab!
Peace, peace, Mercutio, peace. Thou talkest of nothing.
True. I talk of dreams. Oh! Which are the children of an idle brain, begot of nothing but vain fantasy, which is as thin of substance as the air, and more inconstant than the wind.
This wind you talk of blows us from ourselves. Supper is done, and we shall come too late.
I fear too early, for my mind misgives. Some consequence yet hanging in the stars.
And finally, here is the conversation that occurred after the show with our cast.
Awesome. Hello, everybody. My name is Sadie Lockhart. I am the Community Engagement Associate here at American Stage. And we are so excited to have you all with us virtually in this case. We're really interested in hearing questions about the process or themes that might have resonated with you or characters or aspects of the show that you're curious to learn more about. And while you all are doing that, I would love to welcome back the actors. So actors, if you want to pop back onto the screen, I'm going to call everybody out. And if you would introduce your name, what characters you played, and why don't you tell us what city you're coming to us from? It's kind of neat that we're all over right now. So let's start with the director, Kristen.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kristen Clifford. I am the director and also the associate artistic director here at American Stage, and I am here in St. Pete.
Hi, I'm Roxanne Fay. I played Juliet's nurse and Samson. I'm currently in Clearwater.
Hey, everybody. I'm Don Levin. I played Romeo. I live in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Hey, everyone. My name is Julia Ruffino, and I played Juliet. And I'm from Spring Hill, Florida.
Hi, I'm Amanda Schlachter. I played Gregory and Lady Capulet, and I am in Sarasota, Florida.
Hi, I'm Billy Finn. I played Mercutio, and I am currently in Rye, New York, which is a small suburb just north of New York City.
I'm Benjamin Ismail, and I'm in St. Pete.
Hi, everybody. I'm Richard Watson. I played the Lord Capulet and Balthazar, and I'm coming to you live from St. Petersburg, Florida.
Hi, everyone. I'm Kiana Jackson. I played the Prince and the Apothecary, and I'm coming to you from Fort Myers, Florida.
Hi, I'm John Perez. I played Friar Lawrence and Benvolio, and I am here in St. Petersburg.
Awesome. Thank you all so much for joining us. So overwhelmingly, I had a question for you all about the process, and overwhelmingly in the question and answer section, it seems that a lot of folks are really excited and interested to hear about how the experience was translating Shakespeare that we normally do together in the same room, in the same space, to this virtual lens. So I wondered if anyone would be willing to talk about what that process was like and maybe some challenges and opportunities that you found along the way. So if you're interested in answering the question, if you can just raise your hand and I'll call on you just so we're not all talking at once.
Well, I'll start. Yay, congrats, you guys did it, yay. It's been so much fun to work with these folks all week and to really, really dive into how can we use this technology to tell the story? What are the tricks and what are the added little things that we can do in addition to speaking the words that are written so beautifully and all the little ways that we can help tell the audience who are we, what's going on in this moment, where are we? There was a lot of details that go into the crafting of this piece. It was quite surprising how many little things that we could do within our little squares on the screen here.
It was a really, really cool experience. Being a part of the Zoom platform has been my way of, you know, chatting with friends during this quarantine. So to use it in a theatrical way has been challenging sometimes, but in good ways too. You know, learning this new skill set is really cool. Getting comfortable with having a Word document with the script and then seeing everyone in these teeny tiny boxes, but engaging with the camera. So our brains were working, you know, a mile a minute the entire process, but I'm really proud of this group. It was a challenge, but I think we nailed it.
I was just going to say that I think with Shakespeare's plays, his language, this is so rich and so beautiful, and it's just full of imagery. And so even though we are on this platform of Zoom, I strongly feel that the imagery itself can kind of make up for that a little bit. And so I found that as we were going through rehearsal and in the past few runs that we had, that the more we played up the imagery, kind of it took away from this kind of distant feeling behind these computer screens that we all are. So
yeah, they say often in Shakespeare you let the text speak for itself a little bit and lead with the text. So it seems like that, like what you're saying, Donovan, that's a true testament to it in this space that we are in. I have a follow-up question to that. Also, folks are commenting about how much they really loved the use of props throughout the show and how impressive and smooth that was. So I was wondering if anyone could talk about how you guys discussed that and how you guys got the props, and also what that was like with being able to pass it, like you mentioned, Julia, passing it through the screen and how we look at it through this lens.
I mean, we did have a week of rehearsal prior to the performance, which was really helpful to kind of iron out the timing of, you know, how we can out of screen have our prop ready and pull it, you know, to us as if someone just handed it to us. So guiding our eyes where it's supposed to be, that was all rehearsed prior to all of this. And, you know, it took some time, but I think the more, as the week went on, we all got pretty comfortable with how that timing would work and what we should be paying attention to visually to end in the text to make that happen.
And then the other question that they had around that was they were curious if as actors and as the director, did you learn anything different or discover anything differently than you feel like you would have if we were doing this as an in-person performance? So was there something new that was added to your character because we're on this virtual lens? Ben, did I see a hand? Maybe?
Yeah. I just think for me, it reminds me just how important everybody is in this art form, because here we have to be our own lighting designer and our own engineers and our own dressers, and it gives me even deeper, and I already had a deep appreciation, but an even deeper appreciation for all of the extra people that you don't see when you come see a live theater performance and all that they do.
Yeah, absolutely. Ben, do you want to speak a little bit to the behind the scenes process, like how you guys did receive the props and figure out your lighting and all that stuff?
Well, it's really easy for me because the props master's in the other room. But for everybody else, he went on little missions. Jared Fox, amazing director of production at American Stage.
Yay, Jared.
More than most people do. And he is running around town and beyond to drop off props to folks, mail-in stuff so that people can do the magical handoffs. But he's working hard on all the upcoming ones already too to make more magic happen. So we're really excited to bring that to you guys.
It's lots of duplicate props. So it's not just one rose, it's, you know, two sets of roses, three sets of roses, three sets of money, bottles and things like that. Everyone's got their own. So anytime there's a prop that's passed between characters, we need to make sure we've got duplicates and that they look as much as similar as possible. So yeah, it's interesting to triplicate some of your props list items.
Absolutely. It was so neat to be, lots of people are commenting about how neat it was to be able to see those prop exchanges Makes it feel a little bit even more real, like we're in person with each other. Rachel, I do not mean to call you out, but we have an inquiry on here about what it was like on the stage management side of things to run both the tech and highlighting videos and all of that jazz. Would you be open to speaking a little bit about what your process is like, Rachel, and how your role has shifted now that we're virtual?
Sure.
Surprise!
Hold on, we've got two feeds happening in our house here.
Oh yeah, Rachel, yeah. We're getting some feedback.
There it is. All right, that should be better. So I have a large television screen in front of me. I have my MacBook Pro in front of me. I have an iPad Pro in front of me that has the script on it. And I used essentially the same sorts of tools that I would have used in the rehearsal hall and in the theater. The TV screen is sort of what I see on stage. I'm using the panelist chat, excluding all of you attendees, just the panelist chat to give cues and to address any issues that the cast is able to text to me quickly. It's essentially, the chat, it's my mode of communication, like my two-way radio with them. I have a list of all the panelists, which is, of course, our cast and a few others, and I have control as host of this webinar to turn to turn off cameras and to ask people to turn on their cameras. We wouldn't want me able to turn somebody's camera on in another room and surprise them with what we're seeing, but I can remind someone to turn their camera on. I can also mute and unmute people that I have muted. So anytime you saw someone die, I muted them so we didn't hear dog barking or a fire engine going by. And then I would also turn off their video at the end of the scene or whenever it was to be cued. So I've got my script in front of me on an iPad because that's how I've been working. And I've got my notes written in that as I usually do. It's just a line with what's to happen next. And then I used our program called QLab to deliver the sound over the computer sound, and then also the images were basically screen shares, as you saw, from my laptop. So it was, it's kind of like being in mission control. I feel a little bit like the folks at NASA or over at SpaceX, sort of beaming answers and problem solving and images and sound everywhere.
So well, the bridge of the Enterprise.
On the bridge of the Enterprise, yeah. I was going to put mission control behind me, but I didn't have time.
Skillfully done. We're in good hands with Rachel. Yeah. Okay, just a quick show of hands. How many of you have ever done Romeo and Juliet before? You've had experience doing this play before? Okay, great. Thank you.
Cool. Kristen, we have a question for you, speaking of. Folks are wondering, one, what was the directing process like as a whole for this experience? And now that it is over, are there things that you would have done differently?
I think we've been kind of learning as we've been going throughout the week. I mean, first and foremost is we want to make sure people can hear us and see us, right? So making sure that everyone's tech is in shape is a good first step. But then as a director, usually I have this dreaming process that I get to conceptualize a play with designers, and I get to muse about what it's going to look like and what are the fabrics on the bodies going to be, and all the fun that I get to have with designers didn't really happen for this process. But that doesn't mean that we didn't talk about what is the world of this play like, what are the choices that we're making in the telling of the story. So a lot of it was sort of us working to figure out the world together as a acting ensemble, as opposed to there being a lot of information from these outside design elements. And gosh, if I had to do anything differently, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure that there's going to be a whole download of after this of like, this worked really well, and maybe we could have done this better and things like that. But you know, I gotta say, I'm feeling pretty satisfied with this first shot at it. So thanks.
Awesome, thank you. We have a general question from the audience about our YouTube. So they are wanting to see if they could view this online after this performance is over. So Jared, am I correct in saying that the link will be available on YouTube for 4 days after this?
That's correct. There will be a link available once we clean up a little bit. We'll clean it up a little bit and then it'll be posted for 4 days after that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And additionally, someone was wondering if
the experience or what the experience was like not being able to hear the audience's feedback. So often we say that the audience is an extra character in the show, and while we feel their presence and see their numbers ticking up on the side, what was the experience of not being able to hear them and their direct feedback? Yeah, Billy.
Weird, in a word, especially when you're playing a larger, more comic character like Mercutio. You know, so much of the job is figuring out what is and is not resonating with the audience, whether it be laughter in those moments or a gasp or just the way that people are leaning forwards, and not to have that back. I mean, the audience is half of our job. I mean, it's a covenant that we share with each other. So it was great to look down at the bottom of my screen and see how many of you guys were out there watching. So it felt like we had an audience, but it's not quite the same as being in the room with everybody. But you just sort of figure out what's working, and you can feel an energy, even though we're all separated by Zoom. I feel like we do pick up in each other's energies and stuff like that. And you figure out what's working and what's not. And you just hope that it's going out into the atmosphere and resonating with people. So.
Yeah, absolutely. John?
I had an interesting reaction at the beginning. As I was prepping for the top of the show, as well as the prologue, I started getting kind of antsy like I would at a normal show, because I was looking at the participants and I was seeing those numbers keep climbing up, and I was like, oh, that's a lot of people. So I found myself getting a little antsy for that as well, which it was like the normal part of doing a show in a live space. So that, in a physical space, I should say. So that was a neat experience for me.
Yeah, sometimes I feel like if I can see people's faces, I almost feel more comforted by humanity than if I'm just seeing the numbers rack up. But yeah, absolutely. Well, there's a question that we have here. Was there any difficulty with seeing each other's interactions? Like, I know sometimes you guys went closer to the screen as if you guys are looking at each other. So how did you orchestrate those different movements in clarifying when you were looking forward or sideways? Yes, Roxanne, and then Ben, we'll come to you.
It's hard to, that was sort of difficult, because if you're looking at the person, you're looking at that little green light, and we don't do that in life. We don't look at the person we're talking to every second. You know, you do have a tendency to look away, or if there's someone else in the room. And the thing that was interesting was like, okay, if I'm going to look at, you know, Mercutio is over there, do I look in this direction? Is that the right direction? I should be looking this way. That was what was difficult for me to figure out, was like, what direction am I looking in right now? Because you're not really looking at the person that you're having an intimate moment with. You're looking into a camera. So I cheated a lot. I looked at people a lot.
Ben, did you want to say something still?
Sure. I mean, it's very much the same thing. I mean, it's the connection aspect is like the hardest thing to hold on to in this medium, I think. And so, like Roxanne said, I cheated and watched people as much as I possibly could. And then for those little bitty scenes, I just have my words as close to the camera as possible so that I don't really have to pay attention to the camera. But it's not film and it's not theater, and it's both. It's totally everything and nothing like what we've done before.
Yeah, somewhere in between. I have one more question to close us out for this afternoon. I'm curious, what really resonates either with each of you or a couple of you about this story or your character told in today's setting? What really stands out to you?
Something that Donovan and I talked about in some of our scene work sessions was how, I mean, of course, the story is just devastating and tragic, but how the youth of the story are the people who inspire or tragically spark change in the community, you know, and it's very reflective of what we're seeing today, you know, whereas the youth is standing up and as well as older generations, all generations are standing up and trying to create change in our world and unite communities that are unfortunately not on the same page. So I think that's my biggest takeaway from our characters personally, and just the message overall in the show is a cautionary tale to destroy all of the hatred and, you know, negativity towards specific groups of people, and to just come together.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Amanda.
I was really struck just with what hatred and these sort of this idea of these feuding families and this idea of division and separation and constant, and the more we divide and the more we are the other, how from the, so especially from like Lady Capulet's losing her daughter, just how detrimental that is. And that when you set out on that path, that's not necessarily what you're thinking about until it comes home and it's in your house. So I was really struck by that this week working on this project.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that.
You know, I got to play Mercutio last year live in front of people at the Alabama Shakespeare Festival. And this is a role that I have been, you know, my number one dream role that I've been hoping to play for a long time. So to get to do him twice in a year is a gift. And to sort of refocus or refunnel the performance and make different choices based on, you know, the limitations of this box and this dot that I have to stare at. Was frustrating at times, but a great challenge, because it made me have to make different choices and dig deeper into the character and focus on the language and what's going on, as opposed to having the freedom or the crutch or whatever you want to call it of just getting all goofy with my body. Having to refine him pushed me as a performer to make different choices. So it was a blessing disguised as a frustration to get to play this guy in an entirely different forum this way. So Thanks, American Stage.
Thank you for being a part of it.
Sadie, they want to know how many folks.
Oh yes, there was about 190-ish, says Rachel, how many attended. However, I know some households have more humans in them, so I would be curious to see how many overall. What'd you say, Donovan? You're muted.
He's reacting.
I'm saying you're right. I'm just saying she's right.
Yeah, we had a few messages, people saying they had five or six people watching around their TV. So yeah.
Right. So it's more than that.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. That's awesome.
I know, right? What a party.
I haven't spoken up, but this whole process, I don't have anyone on my screen. I just keep the script so that it's always right there, so that, you know, I can always be right on it and know what's coming up with all of the scene changes. But I had no idea that we were performing in front of so many people. That's awesome.
It certainly is cool, the aspects of this that allows us to, in some ways, reach more people for a singular performance. So it's been so special to share this space with all of you. And thank you to our performers and our director and our backstage team and coordinators and Rachel. And thank you all to all the attendees. We really appreciate your support, and we miss seeing you in human form. And we're so glad that you joined us today. You can join us again next Sunday at 2 p.m. for Comedy of Errors, directed by Chris Crawford. And we hope that you will tune in then. And we hope that you're staying safe and happy with your families and friends. And we will see you next time. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you all so much for joining us today. You can learn more about all of our virtual stage performances by visiting our website. And as always, we want to hear from you. If you attended the Romeo and Juliet performance, which themes or characters really resonated with you? You can email us at podcast@americanstage.org or like our Facebook page to join in on the conversation.
Thank you for joining Spotlight, the American Stage podcast. For more American Stage programs and news, visit americanstage.org.